Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're breaking down all the action from the first weekend in college baseball. And later in the podcast, we're joined by reigning ACC Pitcher of the Year, Parker Messick from Florida State. Kyle, welcome back to the podcast. Great having you as always.
I'll be here every week.
Opening weekend, I think, had to be the most successful opening weekend in college baseball history. I can't speak for opening weekend like 50 years ago, but at least in my memory, every single team, everywhere you look, it seems like they were breaking attendance records. I mean, it was just the number of people that went to college baseball games this weekend was just unlike anything we've ever seen. And I don't know if we can credit MLB lockout for that and kind of dissatisfaction with fans, or the fact that for the most part, the weather was pretty good moving on Saturday and Sunday, at the very least, a little chilly some places on Friday. But I mean, that's great. It's great for college baseball, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I saw your tweet about, our tweet about, no, I guess you retweeted someone, but it was about like everyone breaking opening weekend records, like aggregate records for the whole weekend.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, SEC baseball tweeted that out. They had four different schools, I think, either broke records or top two records opening weekend or all time for the stadiums, including Tennessee and Florida and Ole Miss.
And it's not just the big teams too. Like we got tagged in something on Instagram from Grand Canyon, who was in the top five of like total attendance for the whole weekend. So
yeah,
it's cool to see.
Yeah, Grand Canyon though, that's a pretty place to watch a baseball game. So I mean, if you had me, absolutely. If I lived in Phoenix, I think I would spend a good amount of time there.
Yeah, especially with no Diamondbacks on. So let's just move on over to wherever GCU ballpark is.
So I think there's a lot to break down from the first weekend. Let's quickly run through our new top 10. We had Texas at number one, followed by Arkansas, LSU, Oklahoma State at four, Florida State rounding out the top five. Six through 10 is Stanford, Vanderbilt, Long Beach State, Tennessee, Georgia Tech. There's a couple of new faces to that top 10, Long Beach State and Oklahoma State. Do you want to start with the craziness that happened at the Dude in Long Beach State, taking 2 out of 3 at Mississippi State?
Sure. It was wild.
I think the thing that surprised me the most was how much Long Beach State pitching staff really dominated Mississippi State in the first two games of that series. Come Sunday, the Mississippi State bats lit up, and I think that was just a really nice win for Mississippi State to be able to salvage that series a little bit. It's a lot better losing a series 1-2 than it is getting swept, especially at home. Kind of a little weird history repeating itself moment. 2 years ago, Long Beach State hosted Mississippi State and threw a one-hitter en route to a 4-0 victory over Mississippi State. And that's how they opened up that series. This year, Long Beach State threw a one-hitter and en route to a 3-0 shutout victory over Mississippi State. So the secret is, if you're a Long Beach State pitcher playing against Mississippi State, you want to pitch on Friday because you're going to be part of a one-hitter, I think.
Yeah. Also, the secret is to come on our podcast as the head coach, and then your team will win a huge road series. So
that is true. That we have an anti-curse right now for the College Baseball Nation podcast. Eric Valenzuela was a guest last week, and lo and behold, his team won a series at Mississippi State. So we had
Parker. Which is, if you want to win.
Yeah. So later on today's podcast, we have Parker Messick joining the podcast. I don't know if they'll necessarily need our magic because this next weekend they're playing Samford at home in Tallahassee, which I think they would have been favored anyways. But if Florida State wins that series, we're definitely going to take credit for it.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's a sign to all coaches. If you want to win a huge series where you're probably biggest underdogs in, come on our podcast and maybe you'll win.
Yeah, yeah, we need to get some like SWAC head coaches on and get some real fun upsets. But Long Beach State, I think, shocked the nation a little bit. I don't know. I think anyone who follows college baseball knew that they would be competitive. I think fewer people thought they would win that series. And I think even fewer people, maybe the lone person being Long Beach State players and coaches, thought that they would come out and kind of smack Mississippi State in the face quite like they did. But it earned them a top 10 spot in our rankings at number 8. And that's, I think, a well-deserved ranking and something that I think Long Beach is going to now be playing with a little bit of a target on their back, especially when it comes to Big West play. So curious to see how they handle the pressure now of no longer being an underdog.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mississippi State fans going into Saturday's game after losing a relatively close game on Friday, we're probably like, I think we'll be okay. We can probably come back, bounce back and win this game. And then Jonathan Long and Alex Pimentel went and had two pretty good weekends. Jonathan Long went, 4 for 4 with 2 home runs and another walk, 2 RBIs. And then Alex Pimentel went 1 for 2 with 3 walks, another home run, a stolen base. So doing pretty good all over the base paths. And that's how you win that series. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. I think that offense, especially Jonathan Long, was probably the biggest bright spot. Well, maybe that and Luis Ramirez, who on Friday had a really great game. But Jonathan Long, 4 for 4 in that game, and then 6 for 11 overall on the weekend. That gets it done.
Pretty good.
And then, I mean, it was not the easiest weekend to be a home team in the SEC, especially if you're a division favorite. So we saw Mississippi State lose. We also saw Vanderbilt lose a series at home against Oklahoma State. That one maybe was a little less surprising. I think enough people knew that Oklahoma State, with Jonathan Campbell and a pretty deep pitching staff behind him, including Victor Medeiros, transfer from Miami, Bryce Osmond. I think that no one was super shocked to see that they competed, but they returned the favor, beat Vanderbilt in Nashville after Vanderbilt beat Oklahoma State a year ago in Stillwater. So again, big road series win on the road sees a team jump up a bunch in the rankings, and now we have Oklahoma State at number 4 in the country.
Maybe Vegas knew what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. We did talk a lot on the offseason about why do they see Oklahoma State as one of the top few favorites to win a national championship? Well, they did have something good there. I think one thing that I was pretty interested to see with the way Vanderbilt handled the pitching staff was they did have Chris McElveen start. And one of the things that we talked about was Patrick Riley not being in the starting rotation. On Friday, McElveen pitched 4 innings, and then Riley came in and did a 4 inning outing as well. So, it didn't start the game, but a long relief type of appearance, I think, is very interesting. I think that maybe you can imagine a path where Vanderbilt feels like they have a deep enough pitching staff that maybe they do some kind of the quirky pitching opener stuff you're seeing in the MLB with like openers, or maybe they think like, hey, let's only let them go 1 or 2 times through the lineup before we bring in another guy who's going to absolutely blow you away. So I think I'm really curious to see how Vanderbilt's pitching staff is managed moving forward, but they have legitimately 5 guys who could be starters, and all 5 of them pitched this weekend. And I'm very curious whether one of them ends up being moved to the midweek eventually, or if they really are going to be using their top 5 guys and just sort of a plug and play type of role on the weekends. Elsewhere in SEC land, Florida also dropped a weekend series to Liberty. And I think that after winning the opening game of that series, it really looked like Florida was going to not necessarily cruise, but have a pretty successful weekend on their hands. They too are one of the teams around the country setting records in terms of attendance. Fans were excited, something that we don't always necessarily see at Florida, but ultimately Liberty turned that series around and was able to win that series in Gainesville. That earned Liberty now a top 20 spot. So they're at number 19 in our rankings, and Florida drops down still in the top 25, but let's fact check that. Number 22 right now. So just a few spots behind Liberty. Man, quick aside, week 1 rankings, I think, are the hardest rankings to do, because preseason rankings are so hard because you have to like consider a lot of teams, but at the very least you have weeks or months to think about it. when it comes to week one rankings, you have like 6 hours to make decisions. And it's just like so much data has popped up, but still it's not enough. And you're like going to get those of like, oh, my team beat that team. Why did they not move up as much as it's like, I don't know, poll logic. I feel like you could write a whole book on like social media's users and poll logic.
Well, and we, as ranking people, we have to like do well about not overreacting to certain like series losses. Cause like we only dropped Mississippi, like, and we do this by like not dropping teams, top teams or losing early series like that much. Like Mississippi State is still a really good team that returns a lot that will do really well.
Yeah.
And so that's why we didn't drop
them. Mississippi State had a lot of really good performances. Like Landon Sims looked every bit SEC pitcher of the year. Like it was not like Mississippi State was played badly.
Right. And then we just, maybe Long Beach State is better than we thought. Like,
yeah,
like that's not as bad of a loss. And same with Oklahoma State and Vandy. Like we just kind of swapped them around a little bit. Cause like previously what Oklahoma State was 16, Vandy was 2. And so just kind of flipped a little bit there. So like, yeah, there's a lot of early moving in this, and I think it'll start to settle down.
It always does. It always does.
Yeah. But we only had 5 of the top 50 teams that didn't move from where they were. So Texas was one of those. Louisiana Tech kind of did what we expected to do. They didn't move. South Carolina, same. They won 2 out of 3. I had it yesterday. Gonzaga went 2 out of 2 this weekend. And did they just win another one?
Yeah, literally as we're recording this, they just knocked off Cal. So that's a pretty nice win.
Yeah. I can't find the 5th one. But, NC State. Yeah. NC State swept on the weekend. So pretty cool that only 5 teams out of 50 in our rankings stayed the same. We had a bunch of new teams enter the rankings too. So it's a pretty crazy poll time.
Let's talk about a team that did plummet in the rankings. And honestly, I really struggled with ranking East Carolina, because when you get swept at home by a team from the Northeast, that's never a good look. They got swept by Bryant. I would say that to any East Carolina fan listening to the podcast, they're probably already saying, yeah, but we really should have won that middle game. And the truth is, yeah, you probably really should have won that middle game, because if you haven't seen it, and you're listening right now, like pause and go check out, I think John Boy did a breakdown of it, because and he's the best source right now. East Carolina hit a walk-off home run in game 2 of that series. The series was tied, going to game 3, chance to win the series. But wait, apparently before the home run was hit, the first base umpire called time. So yeah, maybe like someone ran onto the field. There was something. No, like, by all accounts, the first base umpire had something in his eye, and so he called time. And Cliff Godwin was like throwing his helmet around, like he
immediately just thrown out.
Yeah, like it was just I mean, I thought he showed a lot of self control, because I would have exploded if that had been
I watched that video and I saw Godwin come onto the field and the ump was just like, nah. So I wish there could have been a fly on the turf to hear what swear words he was using. Like that would have been great.
Yeah. And like, you see the first base umpire saying just like, I had time. And it's like, why? Like, why did you ruin that moment?
Yeah. Cause the ECU player ran all the way, like ran the bases, came to home. All the players came out of the dugout, like started celebrating. Like, they could have like stopped it at any point, but it took them a while to settle it down.
Yeah, yeah. It really, I think John Boy says, I think the first base umpire was trying to play it off as if he didn't call time. But the first baseman of Bryant said like, hey, he had time. But like, I think he was just trying to be like, oh, never mind. And the first baseman was like, no, dude, you called time. So East Carolina got swept. I mean, put at least a somewhat of an asterisk around that. They also were without their ace, Carson Wisenhunt, for violation of team rules. But pitching actually wasn't the problem, really, on the weekend. It was offense that didn't show up. And apparently he will also be out for the following weekend. So it'll be really interesting to see exactly what the story is there. But I mean, he's a first rounder, all American type of pitcher. So pitching wasn't the issue, but it's not a guy that you went out for a long time. I think the other thing that caught my eye over the weekend was that the Pac-12 had a pretty good weekend for a league that's been kind of a little bit like maybe top heavy with the likes of UCLA, Stanford, and Oregon State over the last decade or so, and then Arizona popping up again. I think the like air quotes like middle of the Pac-12 is probably the best that we've seen in a little while. Washington went down to Cal Poly and won that series. I mean, UCLA and Stanford won their series, but especially in those early season tournaments, like the Pac-12 swept them. The Sanderson Classic, Oregon State went 4-0 and I think solidified itself as one of the top three contenders in the Pac-12. State Farm Classic in Arlington, Arizona went 3-0 against a nice mix of SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12 teams. And Cal in the MLB 4 tournament went 3-0, sweeping through a group that had TCU and San Diego State and some other pretty legitimate teams. So Pac-12, I think, did themselves a lot of favors on opening weekend.
Yeah, because like if we go back to years past where these same teams like don't win these early season tournaments where they travel and like don't do well in the non-conference, but then they still beat up on each other in conference play, that really messes with the tournament, like tournament teams. So if you have,
you
kind of know what I'm saying, but I'll try and break it down. Like these teams are really helping conference RPI to help get more Pac-12 teams like, when it comes down to tournament time. So this
and not,
this
not will, just this like in the really tournament, good. But it's not just in the tournament, it's also regional hosts, which I think is something that kind of goes right under the radar a little bit, is that in some years there's only two or three regional hosts on the West Coast. So then you get every single team on the West Coast traveling 1,500 miles for their regional. And it's pretty hard to win a regional when you're having to do like two connecting flights or whatever to get to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and then you have to play on the road. So I'm very curious to see what happens. I mean, I think you could easily see Long Beach, Stanford, Arizona, Oregon State, UCLA, Santa Barbara. There's several teams on the West Coast right now that feel like they're in contention for a host bid after one weekend. And if you get five West Coast hosts, that would be, I think, a kind of a changing of the vision of how teams are kind of in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and that would really help just like super regional and Omaha variability. Diversity, I guess. Yeah, just like having more than just teams from the Southeast that are all really good in Omaha and Super City. Really cool.
Yes, we will see if this trend continues. Something to keep an eye on throughout the rest of the conference play.
Something we're overreacting to in week one. Let's see
That's
if it happens.
Literally the point of week one. But week one is to generate hot takes. That is why we have week one. And speaking of takes that we made that were not necessarily the most successful, we did our first new version of the pick'em. And like in our defense, our pick'em is designed to trick each other, right? Like we're trying to give each other difficult series. And we really succeeded at giving each other difficult series because we went to combine 2-6 on the weekend. We're doing confidence points. So 4-3-2-1, I ended up getting my 4-pointer right and you got your 1-pointer right. So 4-1, I guess, is the score right now. Maybe we'll just do a cumulative score throughout the season and see how it goes.
Yeah, that sucks. I was really hoping to have, I was like, I tweeted this over the weekend, but I was like, man, I thought I had like comfortably had six or seven points. Like
I
definitely Florida, and then the 2 or the 3 point I was pretty confident, and then I had no idea about La Tech and Wichita State, but that was the one I got right.
I remember saying all sorts of crap that turned out to be wrong. Like I was like, oh man, I really should have that Mississippi State Long Beach series worth more points because I really feel like Mississippi State's gonna win that series. So fortunately I had it down at just a 2-pointer because I obviously I picked Mississippi State, and they did not win that series.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. We'll get them back. You know what?
The past is the past, and we will move on. And let's do it in the best way you can, is getting back on the horse. So, Kyle, you ready to do week two pick 'em?
Let's do it.
I think week two is always an interesting week in college baseball because a lot of teams are either kind of coming back down from higher tournaments or the premier weekends they have to start the season. So you see them not necessarily scheduling quite as tough, or maybe you have some teams that schedule week on week one and are scheduling week again on week two because they're just trying to figure out roles for guys and get a little bit of confidence. So the matchups are a little bit all over the place, but there's some good ones in here. And I think there's some ones that we're going to have just as much trouble picking as we did last week. So I think what you gave me the first series last time, right? So I get to go first and give you the first series of the week. Is that right?
That sounds right. Yes.
All right. So we have a list of 13 series here. So we're going to end up picking about eight of them in the end of it. I think there's some pretty intriguing series here to pick from. The one that I want to start you off with is an all state of Texas affair. So Sam Houston State just won 3 out of 4 against Nebraska. They are traveling to Dallas Baptist, who just lost 2 out of 3 at home against Southeast Missouri. Kyle, who's winning this series?
Sam Houston State and Dallas Baptist. It's kind of a tricky one. So we learned from last week to not go with our gut. My gut was Dallas Baptist.
We learned last week we're always wrong. So let's do the odds.
Yeah. Right. But I don't know if Sam Houston State can do it again. Like that was.
I think that's the toughest thing. That's like the whole theme of week two, really, is, wow, this team had a really bad week one. Are they going to bounce back, or are they just not as good as we thought they were? Or this team had a really good week one, they'd get lucky, or is there something there that we just haven't quite figured out yet?
Yeah, but all that said, I am going to go with Dallas Baptist. So going with my gut, which is clearly is not great, but let's say I think this one's the tough one, so I'm going to go 1 point.
All right. I'm glad. I feel like I did well then. I forced your hand a little bit. And that's what the overall number one pick's supposed to do. So mission accomplished.
What are these dots you have on our spreadsheet?
Hey, don't read into it. I've built a code into what I think is some degree of difficulty.
Okay, I'm trying to... So that was your 5-star one. Okay, I think I get it now.
I'm changing them all.
No, I get it now. It's too late.
No, they're all being changed.
I'm gonna give you
West Virginia last week Charlotte. I had a whole thing last week that you didn't catch on to. So you're getting more observant.
But yeah, I'll give you WVU at Charlotte, West Virginia at Charlotte.
Yeah. This one's tough. West Virginia had a really good opening weekend, and I think that's great. We had some people saying, well, if they had such a great weekend, why did they end up in the top 50? I'm kind of wanting a little bit more from them, and I think if they go win a series at Charlotte, that would be a little bit more in my mind. I don't know if I feel super strongly about their ability to go on the road. The first thing that they did was this neutral site thing. I'm going to take Charlotte in this series. I'm also going to go, I think, for, let's go for 2 points here. I want to save my 1-pointer because you're going to give me a tougher one later.
Yeah, that's true. And you don't have to write yes in that column, John. I have a formula there for it.
Oh, wow. Equal if and equals. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Impressive.
Thank you. It's super simple. But you said 2 points?
Yeah, I'm going to do 2 points here.
Okay.
And I think what I'm going to do next is I want to see how you can handle East Carolina at North Carolina. Well, not quite at North Carolina. It's a little bit of a, what, two home, one away sort of situation.
Yeah, it's two in Chapel Hill and one at ECU's ballpark. So
ECU's got to be the best team that hasn't won a game yet. So will they get it done this weekend?
I think they can win one. Can they win two, though? And I think UNC swept also this weekend, so that's pretty good. Pretty good start. I don't remember who they were playing. I don't think it was anyone.
No,
it was tough.
Oh, if you'd asked me like an hour ago, I would have known because I was just looking at it.
Seton Hall. They swept Seton Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a two home at Chapel Hill, I'm gonna go UNC. I'm gonna give this 2 points. So I'm giving you I'm giving the hard ones right now. I mean, like, I'm taking the hard ones away. What? It was taken. Dang it, John.
I'm messing with your formulas, Kyle. All right, what do you have for me next?
Let's see. I feel like I know your formula now, but you've changed
it. I did go and delete a bunch of stuff, and now I've forgotten what was what. So now I'm kind of shooting from the seat of my pants a little bit.
Because I don't want to pick this one myself. Tulane at La Tech. I know you're like super high on La Tech, so this might be a super easy pick for you. But
easy. Louisiana Tech.
Okay.
I Louisiana Tech had some great pitching performances over the weekend, swept Wichita State. I think Wichita State is a legitimate team. I think that our top 15 ranking of Louisiana Tech is totally legitimate. And I'm gonna go for three here. This is a guaranteed Louisiana Tech win.
Okay. If he was guaranteed, you would have 4 points.
This is a nearly guaranteed Louisiana Tech series win. I want to give you, I'm torn between two different ones that I'm thinking about giving you. I'm going to do Duke at Baylor because last week I gave Maryland at Baylor and Baylor got swept. Duke took 2 out of 3 against VMI and wasn't the most convincing performance I've ever seen from a team. So you're going to go with the Bears or you're going to take the road Blue Devils here in this one?
Oh, I mean, Baylor did have a slightly disappointing weekend, but I think maybe our writer who wrote Maryland is really good. Didn't know what he's talking about. So maybe Maryland is one of the Big 12, Big 10 favorites. So I'm going to give Baylor another chance. I know I shouldn't do it. And I don't want to pick that was a 4 points. So I'm going to go 3 points.
Good luck all with right. that.
Yeah. That one's tough.
Yeah,
I don't think Baylor is the 0-3 team that Maryland showed that they were. I feel like all those games were close. I think Baylor lost all of them by 4 runs, which is like maybe not super close, but within reach. It's within reach.
If you say so.
All right, your turn.
There's just a few series on here that I think should be talked about. So like I hope we get to them.
Yeah, and we can go through the rest of them after that we don't pick, because there are some fun ones.
Yeah.
I'll give you Nebraska versus TCU. It's a neutral site, sort of quote neutral, at Globe Life Field in Arlington, which is like 10 minutes away from TCU's campus. So
yeah,
not super neutral.
Yeah, this is one of the ones I want to talk about because the Sarlos era and Fort Worth started off with 2 out of 3 victories in the MLB 4 tournament. They only dropped a game to Cal. So it was a pretty solid start to the year for TCU. Nebraska, like we've mentioned before, lost 3 out of 4 on the road at Sam Houston State. So with that in mind, I am going to go TCU because this is essentially a home series and they had a little bit more success and I'm a little bit more confident in them. I almost hope that Nebraska wins this just because I was excited about what they could bring to the table in the Big Ten and they did not deliver that against Sam Houston State. So it'd be kind of a bummer if they kind of did not meet expectations. So I have a 1 and a 4 here, and I really feel like I could put this in either one. Let's just make this a 1-pointer.
All right. That's fine.
And then up next, part of me really wants to give you Maryland at Campbell because I made you pick Maryland at Baylor and I just gave you the Baylor series and I kind of want to give you the Maryland series right now.
Do it. That's fine.
I'm between that one and going out west, I think, with Nevada at Santa Barbara. But yeah, you know what? I feel like the Maryland at Campbell pick might be a little bit more straightforward for you. Like, I feel like you would just go with Maryland at this point. So I'm not going to let you do that. I see you typing in the spreadsheet. I'm going to go with Nevada at Santa Barbara because Nevada had actually a pretty good opening weekend. Santa Barbara did all right too. But I think that this is, I don't know if we know enough about Nevada right now to quite know how good they are. So yeah, you're going to go with 4 points because that's all you have left. And I could see Nevada winning this series and that would be great for me.
Yeah. Like he said, I'm going with Santa Barbara, 4 points because that's what I have left. But I feel somewhat confident in it more than the other picks that I made. Maybe that just means I made some bad picks before with the point totals that I have left. I think it seems like the strategy is to do the 2 and the 3 and then leave the 1 and the 4 for the second picks because then you can, I don't know. We're still working out the strategy here. But
hey, does this change your mind at all? Nevada played 3-game series at Grand Canyon over the weekend. So part of that record attendance at Grand Canyon. Nevada won game 2 by a score of 20-2 and they won the series as a whole.
it sways my opinion a little bit, but I don't know if it's not going to change it fully. No.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
I have a 3-point lead on the season series. So, my baseline cockiness when it comes to this pick'em is just going to get cranked up 3 notches.
Yeah, but we'll also keep track of the number of wins. Like, you're up 4-1, but we've only won one.
What's the point of a confidence ranking system if you're not going to go with the confidence points? That's the whole point of it.
It's like we're going to keep track of both, right? Just like
we're going to keep track of whatever makes me look better, is what Kyle's saying.
No, right, that's yeah, exactly. Wouldn't you? Right now is making you look better to go with the points.
All right. All right, give me my last series, Kyle.
Last series for you. Let's say Grand Canyon at UC Irvine, just because I kind of want to discuss that one a little bit. That one's interesting.
It's funny, we just talked about Grand Canyon and they lost that series at home. So you kind of feel like maybe that's an easy pick then to go with Irvine, but Irvine just lost 2 out of 3 on the road at Louisiana. Raging Cajuns aren't anything to scoff at though. So, I mean, that's not in the grand scheme of thing, losing a weekend series on the road in Louisiana is not the worst thing for Irvine. So I am going to go with the home team in this one. I think that the pitching staff at UC Irvine is more complete, but Grand Canyon does have, especially on the position player side of things, some interesting bats. They got smoked in the first couple games against Nevada, but they did put up 15 runs in game 3. So I'm kind of seeing this as maybe a offensive strength versus a pitching and defense type of team. And I'm going to go with pitching and defense and pick Irvine.
I'd say that's a good pick. That's what I would have done. So that's your 4-pointer because that's what you have left, right?
All right. Yes. Yeah. So my squad is TCU, Irvine, Louisiana Tech, and Charlotte. Feeling pretty good about that.
Mine is DBU, UNC, Baylor, and UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah. And
ascending order. So yeah, we'll see how this goes. Not feeling too confident, but I was feeling confident last weekend. So
yeah,
just switch it up, I guess, right?
All right, the last thing that we have to do is we have Parker Messick coming up next, the reigning ACC Pitcher of the Year, the Florida State ace. Kyle, we just got off chatting with him, and I enjoyed talking with him. It's interesting to see how he's seeing himself now as a leader on this team, especially in terms of the pitching staff, now that he's a little bit more confident, has a little success and some accolades under his belt. I'm curious to see how Parker Messick goes from a guy who's had a lot of success to a guy that has to have sustained success, right? I mean, there's a huge difference between having a one season success and sustaining it. But after weekend number one, 5 2/3, 11 Ks, pretty good start to the year for Parker.
Pretty solid, yeah. Yeah, he's a guy that we'll be rooting for this year. He's pretty fun. He's a pretty cool guy.
Yep. All right, so next up, we have Parker Messick from Florida State. Up next, we're joined by Parker Messick from Florida State, the reigning ACC Pitcher of the Year. Parker, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So exciting as always, right? Opening weekend, Florida State started off with quite a convincing series sweep over James Madison. Can you just start off telling us a little bit about the energy around Florida State around opening weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first time in my playing career that, you know, I've had a full stadium like that. I don't know exactly how many people were there, but, you know, it was a really loud atmosphere. Our team had a lot of energy. I know we were so sick and tired of scrimmaging each other, you know, all fall and all spring, and we finally got to face someone in a different jersey. So you saw a lot of energy coming out of all of us, and it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, records around the country, I think, were set with attendance. It's just wild, the excitement for college baseball right now.
Yep, it's been great. We love it. We hope it lasts all year.
Yeah, it's like a weird blessing about maybe the MLB lockout a little bit. You get a few more eyes on the college baseball game.
Sure.
So I think heading into the year, we all knew that the Florida State pitching staff was going to be something really special. You had 5 2/3, one run ball, struck out a whole bunch of guys right behind you on Saturday. Bryce Hubbard ends up having an ACC Pitcher of the Week type of performance. I mean, what's the attitude like knowing that you're kind of leading this pitching staff that is supposed to be good and then delivered the results like it did this last weekend?
Yeah, it's humbling. I mean, we all expected it. We knew as a staff that we were going to be really good, and we have a lot of different aspects to each of us as individuals that makes us good as a team. And, you know, me and Bryce pitch completely different in the way that we attack hitters and the way that we throw baseballs. And, you know, we may be both lefties and throw relatively the same speed, but it's a completely different approach as a hitter that you're going to have to take. So it's really hard to, you know, be able to come in and have to face us back to back. And, you know, as I said before, and then you have Ross Dunn on Sunday that comes in and can get up to 97, 98 and with a really firm fastball and a really good curveball. And it's just tough for teams to, you know, have to adjust all weekend to three different types of left-handed starting pitchers. And then, you know, be able to face a bullpen that has guys that can, you know, throw from weird arm slots, fill up zones with four pitches. And then, you know, we have a couple rising lefties that throw in the, you know, mid 90s. So it's just tough to hit all the way around. And, you know, we're really confident what this staff can do.
Yeah, I like that you bring up the kind of the different attitudes and different approaches that your pitching staff has. I think you've become a little bit famous for maybe pitching with a level of intensity that is maybe unrivaled in the college game. I mean, maybe a couple guys out there that pitch with a similar type of intensity. Can you talk about the energy you bring to the mound and the K-strut and the confidence that you're pitching with right now?
Yeah, it's just a little chip on my shoulder. I mean, I like to go out there and compete. I love to compete in whatever aspect of life that I'm competing in, whether it's, you know, checkers or a college baseball game. You know, I want to win. So when I get a big out in a big moment, the energy just kind of flows out of me, and, you know, it brings energy to the stadium. And a lot of times, you know, if I have a good inning and get a few K's and come off the mound fired up, our offense usually gets fired up and scores that same inning. So it kind of tends to be a, you know, an energetic correlation. And, you know, that's just, it's, I promise none of it's scripted. It just kind of comes out of me. It's something different every time. And that's just how I've always liked to play the game. It's more fun that way. And I'll be the same type of pitcher, whether there's a full stadium or no one in the stands.
Are you telling me you don't practice the K strut in the mirror?
I won't admit to it, at least.
All right. Remind me never to play checkers with you in a quiet place, because I think you might.
He might still beat us.
So I think, I mean, maybe for a more casual fan who doesn't know much about James Madison, they do have one of the top hitting prospects in the country on their team in Chase DeLauder. And I think something that we were all pretty excited about was the idea of, hey, there's this lefty-lefty matchup with a couple of top-tier pitchers and this top-tier hitter. I mean, it's safe to say you guys did a really good job of quieting his bat on the weekend. Can you tell me a little bit about, kind of in general, your lefty-lefty approach, especially when it comes to these kind of top prospect kind of guys, how you go after them?
Yeah, we knew coming in he was one of the top-ranked guys. He was a really good hitter. He did really well in the Cape. And, you know, they had a lot of good hitters on that team. And, you know, for me, I attack, you know, big prospect guys as well as, you know, the nine hole on whatever team the same. I like to fill up the zone and attack and mix up my pitches. And that's kind of what I did to DeLauder. And that's, you know, like I did to the rest of their lineup. I, you know, filled up the zone as best as I could with the pitches that I had at the time. And I feel like I didn't show them the same sequence twice. They had a different look every time they faced me, which kind of made it a little more tough for them. And, you know, that's kind of how I attack hitters. Lefty on lefty, I'll throw the same pitches that I will righty on righty. I'll use my changeup to both hitters, my slider and my curveball to both hitters, and then I'll move my fastball in and out to both sides of the plate as well. So it really doesn't bother me whether it's a lefty or righty standing in the box or how big of a prospect or how small of a prospect. It, I kind of just do my thing, play to my strengths, and attack them all the same.
It worked pretty well for you this weekend. And something else that worked pretty well, I think, was the Florida State offense. So, I mean, the offense on Friday night was a little bit slower. On the weekend as a whole, I think batted 375 or something like that. And can you talk a little bit about the amount of confidence it brings to you when runs go up on the boards? Or are you the type of pitcher who couldn't care less if you're pitching with a 5-run lead or not?
Yeah, I know. I always have the Friday night curse. It seems the offense always, you know, never puts up, you know, a too many amount of runs on a Friday night. But it doesn't bother me. I know our offense is really good this year. It's something that I'm super confident in, their bats and their defense. I mean, we have a great defensive side to our bats. It's something that I haven't seen at Florida State in a while. And it's a confidence I can go out there on the mound and pitch with and know that, you know, even if I give up one little mistake like I did, you know, Friday night, gave up the solo shot, my offense came right back up and got two solo shots of their own, and we were right back up 2-1, and that's where their offense stayed the rest of the night. And, you know, just being able to go out on the mound and know that your offense and defense kind of has your back, and it's something that adds to a little bit of confidence that I can pitch with, and I can really just challenge and attack hitters and, you know, make them put the ball in play instead of, you know, making myself make mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be more comfortable knowing that you can throw strikes when you have a good defense behind you. But with that said, I think on the weekend, you guys as a staff struck out like nearly 50 guys. So you're not giving them a lot of opportunities, really.
That's what we try to do, limit walks and get a lot of strikeouts.
So when it comes to the ACC, conference schedule kind of sneaks up a little bit faster than maybe in some of the other leagues in the country. You guys have a few non-conference series coming up before you start ACC play. Can you talk a little bit about what's it like in the locker room, how you guys are using these next couple of weeks in order to prepare for the grind that is ACC play?
Yeah, we always take it one game at a time. That's kind of how we always take care of our business at Florida State. We're going to treat, you know, we got a midweek coming up at JU, and we're going to treat them the same as we are Samford and then California and then NC State the next weekend to open up the ACC series. You know, we're going to, you know, do our game planning, know what we need to do for each team. But, you know, we take it one game at a time, and that's our focus. And I think that's how you really get through the gauntlet of the ACC, and that long season is, you know, you can't look too far ahead at the hot team or the weak team at the time, because you never know. You could be the team that's red hot, or you could be the team that's playing the red hot team at the time. So taking it one game at a time is really how you focus and how you're able to, you know, play to the best of your ability at that given time and get the most wins out of those games.
So I know you just said that you don't like to look ahead, but I do. That's kind of my job.
Yeah, that's our jobs.
So we love to look forward at the schedule, and we see, I mean, every year y'all play Florida in the midweek, like one on the road, one at home, I think one at neutral, I'm guessing. Yeah, one in Jacksonville. Would you prefer a weekend series with them? Do you like the season-long midweek to kind of get a team at different times? Like, how does that you don't pitch in that game, but still it's fun to –
I like playing Florida in the midweeks, kind of separated, because, you know, it always gives us, you know, whether we're hot or cold during the long span of the season, we get different opportunities to play them in different environments. And it's kind of fun to be able to, okay, we got them this weekend, but, you know, now we got to grind out a few weekend series and we got to go right back to them again and see what's changed for both of our lineups and readjust and reattack them. And then, you know, eventually you could see them in a deep run in the playoffs in a regional, super regional, or in Omaha or something like that. I mean, it's just, it's fun to be able to play them spread out so you can kind of see the different ways that we play.
Yeah, cool.
Can you tell me a little bit about your role on the staff and how it's might have maybe changed from a year ago as you've gotten a little bit more comfortable? And how do you view yourself in terms of maybe being a leader of this pitching staff, having some accolades and success under your belt? Like, what are you doing to help the younger guys get into the Seminole way?
Yeah. So this year, you know, it kind of gave me the leadership role that the coaching staff did, you know, for the, as far as the pitching staff goes. And I kind of got some help, you know, on the hitter side. Terrell came in, you have Reese Albert and some of those older guys that can really take control of the hitters to where I can really focus on the pitchers. And, you know, I've been able to do a lot, you know, with the young guys on and off the field, teaching them, you know, how we play as Seminoles and what we need to be doing on and off the field to get ourselves ready for each game. And, you know, a lot of the guys are really bought into what Belly and Meat preach and Metcalf and how we're supposed to be playing. And I'm just there to kind of lead by example. And if I see them slacking, then, you know, get in their butt a little bit, but, you know, that's just how I like to lead. I like to lead vocally and by example and, you know, do my daily business, how I would do stuff. And hopefully they see it and follow along. And a lot of guys have really bought into it, and, you know, we're excited. You know, some of the freshmen really showed out this weekend as far as arms wise. So we're excited to see how they do the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's something that's always exciting right at the beginning of the season, figuring out roles for guys, because Florida State has, I mean, year over year, some of the best recruiting classes. And there's a whole host of young guys there at Florida State that I think could fill in some pretty exciting roles in the bullpen, especially. I think it'll be interesting to see.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I think we really appreciate your time. I mean, we're really excited to see what Florida State brings to the table over the next couple of weeks. I think that there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this team. You don't look ahead, but like Kyle said, we are looking ahead. We got you guys now in the top five right now. We moved you up quite a bit, in large part due to the success of the pitching staff. So thanks for joining us, and best of luck with the rest of your season, Parker.
Yes. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening. It helps us get out the word. Find all of our content on our website, which is collegebaseball.info, and be sure to follow us on social media at collegeballnet. Thanks as always for listening, and have a great week.